Hey, you guys, Flickers of Fear, my movie review show. Now, we're going back to Dario Argento. I think the last Argento movie I did was maybe Opera, and I think I did Phenomena before that. I kind of feel like, and I might have got into this a little bit on my Opera review, where I feel like a lot of people think that Opera, which came out in, I think, 1987, was kind of like the last of his really, really good films. And then like the ones after that were just very bad or just kind of like hit or miss. To a large extent, I would agree with that. Although I'm willing to go to bat for Stendhal Syndrome, which I believe came out in 1996. And Sleepless has its fans as well. Although I will admit that I've only seen that once and it was a really, really long time ago. And I don't really remember hardly anything about it. So I can't really say. So I'm going to have to like watch that again at some point, because that's another one that people, you know, say is kind of like a high point of his later career. This movie is, this is very strange. This is Trauma from 1993. Now, back in the 90s, I saw this movie a lot of times because I used to have it on DVD, and I always kind of had like a soft spot for it. But the thing about it is that it really didn't, I guess it didn't leave a lasting impression, because even though I saw it a bunch of times back then, I sort of like forgot about it. And then I was scrolling through Shudder recently and they had added it, and I was like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that, but I couldn't like remember exactly what it was about. I guess that Shudder put it up because Vinegar Syndrome, the company, just put out like a nice Blu-ray of it, I believe, right around Christmas time, I think, of 2021. So Shudder was showing it, and I was like, oh, what the hell? I'm gonna rewatch that. And it's funny because like the second I started watching it, like pretty much it all came back to me. Because as I said, I've seen this movie lots and lots of times. Now, I will say, if you're new to Dario Argento's films, this is really not the one to start with. I actually kind of have a lot of affection for this movie, but I do know a lot of Dario Argento fans who absolutely hate it or think it's terrible and it's just like a mess. And I can see where they're coming from with it. But like I said, I don't know. There's a lot about this movie that I actually kind of really like, but you know, your mileage may vary. I'm just saying that don't ever make this like your first Dario Argento movie, because in a lot of ways, it's a lot different than most of his regular fare. And even though I do think that it's unfairly maligned a lot of times, I can see that there are a lot of problems with it, even though I kind of like it and I like enjoyed revisiting it and remembering it, you know, because I'd seen it so many times back in the day. So now, interestingly, this was one of only two movies that Dario made in the United States. He's Italian, obviously, if you didn't know. The first one being Two Evil Eyes, which was actually like it wasn't an anthology necessarily, but it was two stories, two Edgar Allan Poe stories. He did The Black Cat, and George A. Romero directed the other half of the movie, which I think was Facts in the Case of M. Valdemar. And so that came out in 1990, and that was made in the United States. So I don't think it did all that well. I remember kind of liking that movie, but again, I haven't seen it in a while. But I guess it did well enough for the American production company to give Dario license to do a full-length movie in the United States, and that ended up being Trauma, which came out in 1993. So this film was shot in Minneapolis, and to be honest, I kind of think that maybe that's one of the things that, I don't want to say like it works against it, but I think the thing that a lot of people like about Dario Argento's work in general, especially his older stuff, is that kind of, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Italy, but just that kind of like really gothic Baroque sort of sensibility, like the whole aesthetic of it. And this one, because it was kind of shot just in a Midwestern city, it doesn't really have any of that really cool style to it that a lot of people look for in their Dario Argento movies. So know that going in. This was shot in Minneapolis. It's nothing, like visually, it's kind of like nothing special. There are kind of like a few cool shots in there and a few hints of like his old kind of like stylish sort of thing. But it's really not so much concerned about visuals. This is actually kind of more a character piece, and it is a giallo, but it has a lot of giallo elements to it. I guess I would call it a giallo, technically it is, but there's a lot of other stuff going on in it as well. This was actually the first time that he had directed his daughter, Asia. She, I believe, was 17 or 18. I hope she was 18 when this movie was filmed, which I'll get into why in a minute. Although the character she's playing in the movie is supposed to be 16. Now, I love Asia Argento, I do, but she's very young in this, and she seems, I don't know, like her acting is not great, but I don't know. There's something about it that's kind of endearing, though, I guess, in a way. And she's playing a Romanian character, so she has like a little bit of an accent, but it's not like distracting or anything like that, because she actually has a very thick Italian accent anyways, so I'm used to her voice. So this is like not dubbed like a lot of Italian movies are, so you do actually get to hear people's voices, which is nice. This also has some kind of, I don't know, like I would call them sort of like glorified cameos, I guess, by some very heavy hitters, especially in the horror genre. You got Piper Laurie in there playing Asia Argento's mom, and you also have Brad Dourif, who, you know, I fucking love Brad Dourif. I wish he'd been in this more. He's probably only in like maybe two scenes, but his death scene is like pretty epic. So, I mean, the special effects are bad, but it's pretty epic, like how it happens. I just wish he'd kind of been utilized a little bit more. Frederick Forrest is in this as well. And so you're going to see like a lot of familiar faces. Christopher Rydell, who plays sort of like the male protagonist. I know I've seen him in other stuff, but I can't remember what. I forgot to like look it up because I was like, God, that guy's like so familiar, but I can't remember like where else I've seen him before. So the story of this, oh, I will say too, that I had forgotten until I started rewatching the movie. I started rewatching the movie, and then there's a scene near the very beginning, like when the killer first strikes, and there is a Tokay Gecko in the scene. And at that point, I remembered very vividly, I said, oh shit, this movie has a scene where one of those lizards gets squished. It's not real. I hope it better not be fucking real. I mean, this was shot in the United States in the 90s, and I don't think you could get away with like squishing a lizard, like on, like, especially one as big as a gecko. But I remember because I used to have a pet Tokay Gecko for a while, and I think they're super cute. And so I remember that really, really upsetting me. So I will admit, when I rewatched this movie on Shudder yesterday, when it got to that scene that I knew that was going to happen, I skipped over it. Because it's like, even if it's fake, I don't want to see it. It was just too upsetting. I'm just getting to, like, it's funny because this movie, it's like, people get beheaded, like, all day long. And I'm just like, don't care. But it's like, you hurt a lizard and I'm just like, no, thank you. And I just had to skip over it. Like, you know how I am. But I did used to have one of those as a pet. And it's like, I think they're super cute. And it's just, I that scene just, like, bothers me. And I remembered, like, where the scene fell, like, in, and I was just like, oh, yeah, that's where this is. And it's not like super important to the plot. I mean, it's just in there to be gross or whatever. So, you know, it's not like you miss anything. And I remembered what happened in that scene anyway, like once I started watching it. Okay, so what happens in this movie? You have near the very beginning. Well, at the very beginning, you kind of have sort of like a weird, like cold open thing with like this little French Revolution, little puppet show type situation, which will make more sense later on. But basically, you have this opening scene where this woman who you're led to presume, I think she's a chiropractor, and she has somebody come into her office, and it's, you're seeing things from the killer's point of view. So she's like, oh yeah, you're like a new patient or whatever. And she's the one that has the Tokay Geckos in her like office, like in a little cage. She has two of them, and that's how the killer ends up getting them. And there's that whole thing. So she's like, oh yeah, you're a new patient, and you know. And then like she's kind of looking at the person, and she's like, you kind of look familiar. Like, have I seen you somewhere before? At which point, the killer, because that's who this is, takes out this little device, which is essentially, it's like a handheld mechanized garrote, I guess. It's like what it is, like this little thing like that with like a little handle, and it's got like a wire, like piano wire or something, and you loop it around a person's head and then turn on the switch, and it pulls the thing and basically squinches your head off, which, handy. They don't really They don't really sell that on QVC, or that I know of. I mean, you know what I mean? So, fun fact, Tom Savini did the effects for this, and he actually came up with that tool and called it the New Somatic, which I thought was very funny. But that is the killer's weapon of choice, is just this head-squinching machine. So, a lot of beheadings in this, and there's a reason for it, and we'll get into that later. So that's kind of your opening scene, you know, so there's the heads just laying there and whatever. Now, a couple days after that, we have our main male protagonist, whose name is David. He's played by Christopher Rydell. He's just driving down the street, minding his own beeswax, and he sees this skinny girl, like this dark-haired girl, and she looks like she's going to jump off the bridge that he's driving over. So obviously he's like alarmed, and so he pulls over to like to help her. And this is Aura. She is, again, like, supposed to be 16 years old, which, like I said, we'll get into that in a little bit because it gets a little creepy. So I'm just going to, like, warn you. But, yeah, so she's trying to kill herself, and he's like, no, no, you don't want to do that. So she seems kind of, like, out of it. And he takes her to, like, a diner and tries to get her to eat. She doesn't want to. And then they kind of have, like, this little argument. So she eats a piece of bread, and then she goes in the bathroom and pukes, and then, like, escapes, like, runs out the back of the restaurant or whatever. Now, what ends up happening is that while she's running down the street, like, these two guys in suits, like, come up to her, and they grab her, and they're like, yeah, we're taking you back to wherever. Because you find out that she actually escaped from a psychiatric hospital called the Faraday Clinic. So they don't actually end up taking her back to the hospital at first. They actually take her back to her parents' house, at which point David, the guy who rescued her, finds out that she stole his wallet, which will come in, which will kind of like come into play later on. So they take her back to her house, and she lives kind of in this really nice house. Now, her parents are kind of weird. Her mom is played by Piper Laurie. And so they are having a seance because apparently her mom is a medium. And honestly, I think the seance scene is probably my favorite. I love seances in movies. I don't know why. It's just like a thing that I have. I really do like the seance in this one because it is actually kind of creepy, where Piper Laurie's character, whose name is Adriana, I think, she's kind of like contacting the spirits or whatever. And this spirit starts... You're led to assume that this is the spirit of the woman, the chiropractor, that was beheaded at the beginning of the movie, because she says something like, you know, my head, he took my head, you know, the killer is present. So, and everybody's like wigging out, obviously, because, you know, this medium is saying that the killer is here somewhere, and that it's, that he's like taking people's heads, and that's like not good. So at that point, for whatever, like I said, there's kind of mass panic. Everybody at the seance is flipping out. And then the mom and the dad, like Aura's mom and dad, like run out into, because I think the dad runs out first and the, or the mom runs out and then the dad chases her or whatever. They go out into the rain and it's like this big yard and everything. Then Aura, Asia Argento's character, she runs out after them, at which point she sees through the bushes, she sees like what she thinks is her mom, who's been beheaded, and then she sees what she thinks is the killer holding up her mom and her dad's heads, like in front of his face. And she like obviously flips out because now both her parents are dead and shit like that. So at this point, she has this doctor that comes there, Dr. Judd, who was apparently taking care of her at the Faraday Clinic. And then the cops come. And she's kind of like, she says she didn't see anything. She says, you know, the killer was like holding these heads up in front of the face and I didn't see who it was. And she manages to elude the police. And then because she stole David's wallet, she looks at his driver's license and basically goes and finds him like at his job. Now he works at like a TV station. And I think that he's like a storyboard artist or like a sketch artist because he's doing like sketches. So I guess like back in 1993, when they were doing, you know, news broadcasts and stuff like that, he had to design like all the graphics like in the background. So that's kind of what he does for a job. So, so she finds him and like waits outside of his thing. And she's like, I'm sorry, I stole your wallet. I needed some food. So she gives it back to him. And she's basically like, yeah, both my parents got murdered by this, you know, killer that's going around. And like I said, because of the chiropractor being killed at the beginning, and now there's like a double murder, so now they're thinking, oh, it's a serial killer, and they start calling it, predictably, the headhunter. Now, so there's that going on, and she's like, look, I don't have a place to stay. Both my parents are dead now. So he said, okay, well, you can come back and stay at my apartment. Now, at this point, we have, like, the lizard scene, and how that even comes into it. Like I said, it's not hugely relevant to the plot, but there's this little kid named Gabriel who apparently lives next door to the killer. Like, he doesn't know that, obviously, but he's freaking out, like, at night because the killer has taken the chiropractor's head just to be, like, for shits and giggles, I guess, and has put it in the window, like, looking out at this kid's bedroom window. So, like, when he looks out, he just sees somebody looking at him that doesn't ever move, and it's, like, wigging him out a little bit. So there's that. So Gabriel is the kid that lives next door, and he's the one that actually gets curious and sneaks over to the killer's house and finds... He sees the lizard, like, killing a butterfly, and then, like, he goes in there and finds the head squinching tool and all this other stuff. And well, he's like really scared because he finds like all this murdery shit. And I think he finds the head too. And he's holding one of the lizards and like squishes it. And it's like, it really, really upsets me. And I can't like even talking about it makes me upset. But yeah, so that's where that came into it. So I was just like, nope. And I just like skipped right past that point. But you know, I knew what happened in it. And so it was okay. So at that point, we're back with David and Aura. She is obviously having some problems. Like I said, not only were her parents both apparently decapitated right in front of her, essentially, but she escaped from a psychiatric clinic. And you find out that what is wrong with her, actually, is that she is anorexic. Although, I kind of feel like they did okay with the anorexia in this one, and I'm gonna get why this is, like, so about anorexia in a bit. But she also has, like, bulimic traits, too, because at this point, like, David comes out the kitchen, and there's, like, food all over the place, because it looks like she binged, and then she's, like, puking in the bathroom. So the next day, he, like, tells one of his workmates about it, and the workmate, who says that he's been watching Oprah and shit, so he knows all about anorexia, and so he goes off on this big thing about, like, what it is, which, like I said, is mostly accurate, but has some, like, other weird shit in there, too, that's not super accurate. Like, I had a family member that had anorexia, so I know a little bit about it, but some of the stuff in there was fine. But some of the psychological stuff was a little iffy, but it wasn't too bad. Now, so at this point, David, who up to this point, because he's been letting Aura stay at his house, because like I said, he feels bad for her. He saved her from committing suicide. She's obviously got problems. And, you know, he wants to help her. She doesn't have any place else to stay. So he's been letting her stay at this, at his apartment. But he also has, I wouldn't call her a girlfriend, but he's kind of like, I don't know, a fuck buddy, like a friend with benefits, something like that. So it's this woman named Grace that he works with. She's like an on-air personnel, like a newscaster. And, she's a stone cold bitch also, but, you know, she... You find that out later on. But but he's like sometimes calls her up like for booty calls or whatever. So she calls him and she's kind of like, you know, she wants to come over one night, but he's like, no, I have this, you know, this kid here. And he's very like adamant about saying she's just a kid. She's just a kid. Like I said, she's 16. She was older than that. You know, that actually Asia Argento was older than that. I've seen 17. I've also seen 18, but she's playing a 16-year-old. His character, I don't think they specify how old he's supposed to be, but he's clearly older than college because he has like a job. So I was imagining he looks about 28 or 29. And I think that the actor playing him, I think there was a 12-year age gap. Because I think he might have been 30 or 29 or 30, like when he was filming this. So it's a little weird. So anyway, I'm just going to get into that. So in an effort to prove to Grace that, you know, this child, this 16-year-old, is not actually his new girlfriend, he's like, yeah, she's here, but it's fine. You can totally come over and we can fuck or whatever. So Grace comes over and they're fucking, and then Asia or Aura, she comes out and sees them and is just kind of like, nope, because there's a thing in it where anorexics are like afraid of sex and stuff, which isn't entirely inaccurate. They do have a thing where they don't really want to grow up, so they want their bodies to be like still stay like child bodies. And there is like a weird scene where David like walks past the bathroom and sees Aura, and she has thing, like, over her boobs, like, flattening her boobs. And then, like, she takes it off so you can see, like, Asia Argento's boobs. And at which point you have to think, well, she's only 17 or 18 years old. And her dad directed this movie. But I don't know. I kind of feel like I've talked about that before, because Dario and Asia, I'm not really sure what their, like, relationship is like. But he does, like, some really weird fucking shit to her in his movies. Like, in the Stendhal Syndrome, she's, like, brutally raped, like, a bunch of times, like, in that movie. And it's just, like... it's just, I don't know, it's very weird. But like I said, maybe it's not that weird to them. But yeah, so you do actually get to see her boobs in this, even though she's, I don't think she's actually, the actress is actually underage, but it is kind of weird to have your dad, maybe he wasn't on set, I don't know, but it is kind of weird to have your dad direct in a movie and be like, yeah, let's see his titties. But I don't know, it's just very, very strange. But yeah, so anyway, she runs off when she sees David and Grace having sex. And then David is just tells Grace to get the fuck out, and then he runs after her. And even though David has been, like, adamant, as I said, by saying this is just a kid, but as soon as, like, he catches up with her, they start, like, hugging and making out. And obviously now they're a thing. Like, so now he actually does have a 16-year-old girlfriend. Because they don't have sex, but they kind of tried to, I guess, because she says the next morning, she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't. You know, because like I said, she still had that thing. But so yeah, it's all a little bit, I don't know, I guess it's all a little bit sketchy. I was thinking about it earlier and I was like, well, it almost kind of seems like it's almost like the same age dynamic as you saw in the much beloved 1987 movie Dirty Dancing, because I think that Jennifer Grey's character was supposed to be 16 too in that, right? And then like Patrick Swayze's character was way older. So I guess you have a similar thing going on here, although I'm not sure if Jennifer Grey, the actress, was older. Like, obviously she was older than 16, but I don't know how much older she was. In this one, like I said, Asia Argento was only a year or two older than her character was supposed to be, and I think that the actor playing David was in his late 20s, or maybe he was 30, so it does seem like a little bit weird. Especially because he made so much of the fact of her being a kid, like, the whole, like, first half of the movie, and then he's like, oh, never mind, we're, like, boyfriend, girlfriend now, so I don't know, it's just really weird. But yeah, so, because Grace, his fuck buddy that worked at the news station with him, because she was pissed off about being, like, apparently thrown over for this younger model, she actually reported Aura to the Faraday Clinic, and, so when he comes home one day, she's like, yeah, they came and got her because she's supposed to go back to the clinic. So they take her back there, and Dr. Judd, her doctor, is like trying to like hypnotize her, or he actually doesn't hypnotize her. He gives her these weird like psychotropic like berries or something like that. That's supposed to be like some kind of, it's supposed to be like a memory enhancer, I guess. And is trying to get her to remember like what happened the night of the murder so she could like see the killer's face, but it doesn't really go all that well because she doesn't remember who it is. Meanwhile, back at the station, David and his buddy have figured out that all of the murders so far have occurred when it was raining. So there's that. And then when he finds out, like I said, that that Aura has been taken back to the Faraday Clinic, so he goes there. She had stolen some keys, so he actually is able to bust her out. Now, at this point, too, they sort of, like, get to the bottom of the mystery. And I don't know, like I said, this came out in 1993. I'm not sure I entirely want to spoil it, but much like in a lot of giallo movies, the motive for the killer is something that happened in the distant past, and all of the people that are killed, even though they seem just like random people, actually all were involved in something horrible back in the old days that the killer is getting revenge for. So I'm not going to spoil who it is because, like I said, they just put this up on Shudder, and I feel like maybe a lot of people haven't seen it. As I said, if you're into Dario Argento, then you should probably give it a watch. I feel like it's one of his more forgotten ones, but I will totally understand if you're not really all that into it, because it does have a lot of the aspects that make Dario Argento's stuff so appealing. I do like the giallo aspect. I like the over-the-top motivation of the killer. Actually, the motivation of the killer is actually like pretty horrific. Like, what ended up happening back in the past is, like, pretty fucked up. Even though it's improbable, I really do like the head squinching machine, like, the new somatic thing. Like, I think that's a pretty cool little touch. And but I will say that this has, like, a lot of problems to it as well. I feel like the story is a little bit convoluted. It's not super hard to follow, but there is some stuff that probably could have been excised. It's not a hugely long movie. I think it's an hour and 45 minutes. It's a little bit long for a horror movie, but I didn't feel like it dragged or anything. Like, I was pretty invested in it. I kind of wish Brad Dourif had been in it more. He gets killed, by the way, by getting his head lopped off by an elevator descending. And like I said, the green screen of his head screaming and stuff like that is, again, improbable. The special effect isn't that great, but it's still pretty entertaining. I did like, the sort of recurring motif of some of the heads after they got cut off, like, still sort of being able to talk for a second or, like, move around, because I'm like, really weirded out by decapitations, because it's always been, like, a source of morbid fascination for me, like, how long that you would know that you had been beheaded. Like, you know, even for 30 seconds, that seems like a really long time when you're just a head. So the fact that he put, like, a couple scenes in there where, like, the head got cut off and was still kind of talking and, like, looking around for a second, like, always kind of, like, weirded me out. So there's that. I will say, too, that even though Tom Savini worked on this movie, and he was the one that came up with the new somatic machine and all that kind of stuff, there's not as much gore in this as you might imagine, like, you know, knowing those facts, knowing this is a Dario Argento movie, knowing that Tom Savini was the one that did the effects. And I don't know, I think that Tom Savini did do some more kind of, like, egregious, like, gore beheadings and stuff. I mean, the beheadings are bloody, but it's not as over the top as some of, you know, Argento's earlier work was. I don't think it was to do with censorship or anything like that. I just think that they did the gory scenes, and then I think Dario wanted to step back from that a little bit so he could concentrate more on the mystery and the suspense and the character building and stuff like that, rather than having all this over the top gore. I'm not entirely sure that was the right decision, because, like I said, a lot of people do like to watch his movies for that, but, you know, I respect if he wanted to go, like, in a slightly different direction with it. I will say, too, that I did kind of like the fact that that Ozzy Argento's character is anorexic. And I do think they treat that pretty sensitively in this. And there's a reason for that. It's because Ozzy Argento's half-sister, so not Dario's daughter, but Daria Nicolodi's daughter from a previous marriage before her and Dario Argento got together, because Asia is Dario Argento and Daria Nicolodi's kid. So Daria Nicolodi's other daughter, she had a daughter named Anna, and Anna had anorexia, and Anna actually shows up in this movie. And that's why at the end, like, over the credits where that last scene is, like, there's that really, really skinny girl, like, dancing on the balcony. And it really doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the movie, so you'd be forgiven for being like, what the hell? That's the reason, because that's Anna. She had anorexia, and that was where Dario Argento kind of, this was, I guess, his way of, like, dealing with it or working through it. Unfortunately, Anna ended up dying not too long after this movie came out. Not from anorexia, she was actually in a motorcycle accident, I believe, that killed her. So, but yeah, so she's in this, but that's the reason that anorexia is, like, such a big plot point in this. Even though I will say Asia looks very thin, but she doesn't look anorexic, you know what I mean? In the same way that her half-sister Anna does at the end, who absolutely kind of does look anorexic, I have to say. She's very, very skinny. But yeah, so like I said, I don't want to spoil who the killer is, even though as soon as I, because like I said, I saw this movie a bunch of times back in the 90s, and then I didn't see it again for a really long time. And then when I was rewatching it, like, as soon as it came on, like, as soon as that first couple scenes went by, I remembered, like, who the killer was, and I remembered, I didn't remember exactly what the motive was, I sort of kind of remembered, but I absolutely remember who the killer was. I don't know, so I don't really want to spoil it. I think you'll probably be able to figure it out, I'm not really sure, but so the story is a little bit convoluted. Like I said, it's not as visually cool as a lot of Dario's other stuff. It's not, you know, the setting of it isn't all that interesting, because it's just, you know, nothing against Minneapolis, but it's not a real, like, aesthetically, visually, like, beautiful-looking city in the way that a lot of his Italian settings and the other ones were, with all those Baroque like backgrounds and stuff. This doesn't even have any of that, like, you know, crazy lighting or anything like that. I kind of feel like he had gotten away from that like later in the 80s anyways. And but this is a lot more naturalistic, but it still has that over the top element of not quite believable. There's even like some kind of, I don't even know if I'd call it supernatural aspects to it, because you have the whole thing at the with the seance at the beginning, and what is presumably the ghost of this chiropractor woman that gets killed at the beginning, who is communicating with, but the way that it works out, I mean, that's not necessarily a ghost. I don't know. But like I said, there's not supernatural stuff doesn't happen like later on in the movie. So it's almost kind of like they introduce that element, but then it doesn't really play into the movie all that much later on. So this is grounded in reality, like a lot of giallos are, even though it's very improbable the way some of the murders take place. You know what I'm saying? So there is still that element of like that operatic, that kind of like unbelievable sort of aspect to it. Reviews on this, particularly among Dario Argento fans, very, very divided. Nobody thinks it's a great movie, okay? It's just, I'm gonna tell you that right now. I don't know a single person, but I kind of feel like it just gets really, really mixed reviews. I feel like a lot of Dario people are like, ah, it's all right. Like, it's not great. But like I said, I've seen some Dario Argento fans that really hated it. They thought it was awful. They thought the acting was awful, particularly Ozzy Argento's acting, which, like I said, the acting, it's not great. She's very young. But you know, I do kind of feel like there's still like a charm or a vulnerability to it that kind of gives it a little bit, you know, that kind of gives it a little something something. I don't love like the main actor. He's not bad. He's just like kind of bland. Like I said, I'm a little bit creeped out by the whole romance aspect, because he's obviously, she's supposed to be a teenager and he's obviously much older than her. And, just, I don't know, that just kind of like rubs me a little bit the wrong way. But like I said, it's really not all that different from Dirty Dancing if you're going to go that way, because she was supposed to be 16 as well. So I'm not going to complain about it too much, but it is a little bit weird, especially because he spends so much of the first part of the movie, like just say, she's just a kid, she's just a kid. And then, you know, and then suddenly they're making out and like rolling around in bed together. So you know what I mean? It's a little bit weird. You know, I don't know. There's like, there's a lot of stuff about this that I like. It is kind of a mess, but I don't know. It really does have kind of, I don't know, just like moments of coolness in there. So I do think that if you're into Dario, that it is worth watching. Just temper your expectations. Like, don't think that it's going to, I mean, I liked this much better than something like The Card Player, for example. This is miles better than Dracula 3D, for Christ's sake. I liked this better also than his Phantom of the Opera adaptation. So it's not the worst thing he's ever done by a long shot. And I do actually have quite a lot of affection for it. So I was glad to like be able to rewatch it after all this time. And like I said, it's not, I didn't find it boring. It is a little convoluted, the plot, but not too hard to follow. Wish it had been a little bit gorier. Wish Brad Dourif had been in it a little bit more. I kind of feel like Piper Laurie sort of phoned it in. She said that she wasn't really into it, you know what I mean? And she was just kind of thought the whole thing was silly. And so it doesn't really come through, because she's kind of a pro, but, you know, you could tell she wasn't taking it all that seriously. But, you know, it's, overall, it is what it is, and it's still an enjoyable movie, at least to me. So if you've seen it, let me know what you think about it in the comments. If you haven't seen it, like I said, I didn't spoil the killer or anything, because giallos, that's kind of like a big deal. But it's on Shudder, and Vinegar Syndrome just released like a nice Blu-ray of it, if you'd rather go that route. But if you have Shudder, you can totally watch it on there. They just added it a couple weeks ago. And so let me know what you think about it in the comments. What's your favorite Dario Argento movie? Do you love this one? Do you hate this one? You know, are you just not into it? Do you not get it? Or whatever. Just let me know in the comments, and that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.